Chapter 20. The sure thing jumped into orbit just after I lifted off from the Credon Hill. Or actually, that ship jumped in 300,000 kilometers from Earth. The ship's momentum was carrying it about 70 degrees from the direction of Earth's orbit around the sun, and it was traveling much too fast to be caught in our planet's gravity well. It would need several hours to swing around into an orbit low enough to make unloading by dropship practical, so I contacted Perkins directly, and my Panther raced up to meet the sure thing when... Yes? You in the back there with the homemade Star Trek shirt? Put your hand down, this isn't high school. You want to know why the sure thing's momentum was all wrong for dropping into Earth orbit? It's because that ship's direction and speed were determined by the need to rendezvous with a Jarapatha star carrier at the edge of the Paradise star system. Also, the Paradise system is moving around the center of the Milky Way about 123 kilometers per second slower than Earth's sun. Also, the disk of the Paradise system, the plane on which those planets orbit their star, is tilted 47 degrees from the disk of our star system. Any ship traveling from Paradise to here needs to cancel those differences before it can begin to match orbital speed with Earth. Also, Paradise and Earth were at about 170 degrees apart in their orbits around their stars, with Paradise going one way and Earth headed pretty much in completely the opposite direction. Got it? Great. So when... Seriously? Yes, the sure thing was attached to a star carrier for the journey. Why did the star carrier not accelerate or decelerate or whatever along the way? Because star carriers are not designed to move around in normal space. They are just platforms with large capacity jump drives. The long spine of the star carrier can't take the stress of high thrust maneuvering, especially not when the hardpoints are loaded with heavy starships. Happy now? When... No, listen, Terry, or whatever your name is, if you have any more nerd-nick questions, go get an astrophysics textbook or research the answer on Wikipedia. Anyway, when I arrived at the sure thing, Dave and Jesse pinged greetings to me, stating they were getting their units squared away for the drop to Earth, and they would talk with me later. Perkins was waiting for me in the docking bay, her face displaying a wary look. Holding up my hands, I assured her, "You're not in any trouble." Not yet. Not for me. This is sort of a courtesy call. What? She cocked her head and peered at my chest. What is GPR Skipistan? Shit. I forgot that I had changed out of my wet hiking clothes and into a field uniform during the flight up. It's a long story. Is there a place we can talk privately? She pointed to the open door of the Panther behind me, so we went into the cabin and I closed the door behind us. Coffee? I asked, pointing to the cabin's tiny galley area. Real coffee, I emphasized. From Earth. Oh, her eyes almost rolled back in ecstasy. I would love a cup of real coffee. After we each got coffees the way we liked, we took a moment to enjoy our beverages and quietly study each other. She seemed tense. My knowledge of her was limited and out of date. Was she always keyed up like this? Was she anxious about coming home after such a long time away? Or was she apprehensive about the reception she would get from the Pentagon? I had told her the Army was not a fan of me calling an audible on the play every time the Flying Dutchman left Earth. She was staring at me. My guess was that whatever I had to say, she wanted me to get on with it. "Glorious People's Republic of Skipistan," I explained, pointing to the patch on my chest. The short version is yes, it is a real country, a member of the United Nations and UNEF. The U.S. Army has seconded me to service with the armed forces of Skipistan for the duration. She blinked slowly at me. Skippy has his own armed forces? Sort of. You're looking at the entire Army, Navy, and Air Force of Skipistan. I have a rifle around here somewhere. I pointed to the lockers behind me. It's a compromise that allows me flexibility to act in ways that protects everyone without getting other nations riled up that an American has the keys to our elder arsenal. I see. For the duration of what? My answer was a shrug. All I can say is while I'm seconded to Skipistan, I'm not getting paid by the U.S. Army or accruing time toward retirement. UNEF is taking it seriously then, she asked, relieved. They don't all think the war is over because you have a cache of super weapons? UNEF Command's military leadership is working on it. The governments and the public are tired of constantly thinking about war and worrying every time they look at the sky. Listen, you are going to get a mixed reception. Some people down there will be thrilled that humans have been kicking ass and that your actions with the Legion are a good basis for an alliance with the Ruhar. Other people will fear that you have gotten humanity stuck in someone else's war. What I need to know is, what is your real strategy? Not the watered-down half-truth bullshit you told Ross and you'll tell the Pentagon when you get down there. In case you haven't figured it out yet, developing a long-term strategy is not my best skill. Also, we can't afford to step on each other's toes again. That's for damn sure, she muttered into her coffee cup. If I were you, she glanced up at me, then back to her coffee. I would want to smack me. It wasn't your fault. Besides, I worked out on the punching bag in the gym until I got over it. I winked. She grinned, and we clinked our coffee cups together to toast, letting the past be the past. It had worked out pretty well, after all. At the end of our renegade mission, we thought Earth was safe for possibly hundreds of years, so it's likely I would not have taken the risk at Maris to locate a cache of Elder weapons. I don't know what to tell you, she shrugged. My grand strategy was always a pipe dream. Now it's out the window. I never counted on the merry band of pirates flying around the galaxy with Elder nukes and a talking beer can. She flashed a wry smile. Oh, bullshit, I snorted. You may have to tweak your plans, but one starship and a handful of Elder nukes don't change whatever you wanted to accomplish. It's a big galaxy out there, full of assholes who need a beatdown. So, I set my cup down and leaned forward. What's your plan? She stared at me, like she was trying to decide how much to tell me. Don't worry, I assured her, sitting back in my seat to be less confrontational. I'm not beholden to the Pentagon or anyone other than humanity overall. Whatever you say, I won't tell anyone, but I do have to know. It's unlikely we will get permission to put any of this into action. Right. Assume we do. Well, she took a sip of coffee, savoring it. One thing the Ruhar had never gotten quite right was the subtle flavor balance of coffee. Even the best samples they fabricated had an off flavor, like they added something to cover up the real taste. Genuine coffee had to be a real treat to someone who had been away from Earth as long as Perkins. First, I need to know if Skippy can do something. She looked at me, hesitant. Ask him, I said, clamping my hands twice. Skippy, we need to talk with your lordship. Ah, his avatar shimmered to life. I am not a dog, Joe. You don't clap for me to appear. Have some respect. I did call you your lordship. Did you mean it? That made me snort. What do you think? Now I'm insulted. He folded his arms, glaring at me. Mr. Skippy, Perkins interrupted, looking mildly disgusted with me. I have a question for you if you have time. See, Joe? He waggled a finger at me. That is a respectful way of speaking to me. You should take notes. She doesn't know what a shithead you are yet. Perkins, sorry. Go ahead. The major threat to Earth is from the two senior species, the Maxulks and the Rindaloo. It would be useful to have a non-lethal weapon to use against them, something that threatens not their lives, but their power.
Uh-huh.
Skippy nodded. That makes sense. Good thinking. That is what Joe should have been doing since the beginning. Tactfully, Perkins ignored that comment. Skippy, can you shut down wormholes that are strategically important to the senior species? I guessed what she was thinking. You want to isolate them in their own star systems? She nodded to me. Yes, though what we should use is the threat of cutting their access to the wormhole network. If that doesn't work, we could begin shutting down wormholes. Use it as both a carrot and a stick. If the Rindaloo sign a non-aggression treaty with us, or even a mutual defense agreement, we shut down wormholes that the Maxulks need and open wormholes that give the spiders an advantage. What? She must have reacted to the expression on my face. Skippy, I said. You tell her. Like I said, that is good thinking. Skippy shook his head sadly. It might be possible to temporarily shut down a small number, or a single, wormhole, or to create temporary wormhole connections that give one side an advantage. But the wholesale changes you're talking about, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Not anymore. Not now. To create an effective embargo of, for example, the Maxoaks, would require shutting down hundreds of wormholes across the galaxy. To achieve even a much more limited goal, isolating only a few of their most strategically important worlds would require disabling more than 36 wormholes, because the most important worlds tend to be located near wormhole clusters. The Maxoaks would still have immense combat power and incentive to use it. You can't do it? Perkins pressed for an answer. Or we shouldn't do it. Both, he replied. We should not do what you propose unless we are certain the result would not be worse than the current situation. To provoke the senior species is incredibly dangerous. I warned Joe about that when he explained his mutual assured destruction plan. Okay. She let out a long breath. Does it matter? You can't shut down dozens of wormholes. No, I can't. The network would not accept that type of instruction from me. Moving dormant wormholes was sort of the last straw for the network. It accepted my commands, but warned that I am now basically on probation. Shutting down wormholes would push the network too far. It would very likely refuse to communicate with me. If that happens, we will lose access to the beta site and to Club Skippy. And lose our ability to create temporary shortcuts between wormholes. So no, let's not do that. She frowned, one side of her mouth curling downward. All right, that idea goes out the window. I waved a hand to dismiss her sour mood. So we can't use a magic beer can to make the problem go away. You had plenty of success without Skippy. Whatever plans you developed didn't include semi-divine intervention. What, semi-divine? Skippy repeated excitedly. Oh, I like that. Let's use that phrase to refer to me from now. Let's never say that again, okay? Damn it. I didn't want Skippy going off on a tangent. Can we get back to the subject? Come on, Perkins. Give me something to work with. I hate to say it, but Skippy is right. Mostly, we have been bouncing from one crisis to another out here. It would be nice to have a strategy. What I have is a range of options, she cautioned, depending on what the enemy does next. Your strategy is reactive? I asked, unable to conceal my disappointment. My hope had been that she would make the enemy react to us. No, the Legion has already poked the hornet's nest with a stick. We set the wheels in motion. She mixed metaphors and neither of us cared. She told me her plan. Note to myself, never play chess against Emily Perkins. Never play poker against her either. Also, the Ethics and Compliance Office of the Beatles has a lot to learn from her. That woman is devious. Thank God that she is on our side. It was great seeing Cornpone and Ski again. We sat around the Sure Things galley, drinking iced tea and swapping stories. Jesse told us some bullshit about how tough his life was when he was growing up. He made it sound like his family lived in a cardboard box. I couldn't let him get away with that shit without reminding him that growing up in the North Woods of Maine is not so easy. Hey, I said, I grew up in a two-bedroom house. When I was old enough, I slept above the garage to get away from my sister. Dave snorted. We had one bathroom for the four of us, I added. Jesse shook his head slowly. You had indoor plumbing? Shit, I was losing the game and I knew it. Well, I shrugged. It wasn't exactly plumbing. I found a busted drywall bucket on the side of the road and patched it up with duct tape. Man, I was so proud that we didn't have to go to the outhouse on cold winter nights. Of course, we didn't have heat, so the bucket would freeze. That was actually a good thing, except when you had to chip out the ice later. Dave was staring at me. No real plumbing, but you had indoors? Like, in a house? With a roof? He made a mock bow toward me. Wow. Excuse me, Your Majesty. Jesse, did you ever have luxury like that? Nah, we lived under a tree. Dave gaped at Jesse. You had a tree? It was more like a stump, Jesse corrected his mistake. In the winter, when it got really cold, we had to find a bear's den and wait for the bear to hibernate so we could huddle up next to it. Dave wasn't giving up. You had a bear? We had to bribe squirrels with nuts so they would let us spend the winter with them. Jesse gasped. You had nuts? It kind of went on like that for a while. Damn, I'd miss those guys. I hope that wherever fate takes us in the future, we can serve together. Major Katie Frey tapped her laptop screen, reading the message again. It was the official announcement. She had heard it from the battalion CEO in his office before she saw the email. Along with the promotion, she was being offered leadership of the Canadian contingent in the International Star Force. Four teams were training in Alberta, preparing for the International Star qualification exercise that would take place in 3 months. It was a great honor that her country wanted her to lead Star Team Canada. Rumor had it UNEF was considering setting up a forward operating base at Club Skippy, where Star Teams would train as part of the Alien Legion. Assuming the Legion concept went forward, there was a lot unknown about which aliens would join an alliance with humans. It was an honor. It was a great opportunity. Then why was she hesitating? Pulling out her Z-phone, she typed a message to Smythe. I would like to talk when you have time, she sent. The reply came immediately. Now is good. Looking at the clock, she saw it was after midnight in England. Of course, Smythe could be anywhere in the world, or above it. Hello, sir. She cringed at the awkward opening. Smythe must have sensed her nervousness, for he laughed softly.
Good to hear from you, Frey. Congratulations on your promotion.
Thank you.
And on your new assignment. I heard you will be leading Canada's STAR program.
That, she took a breath, is what I want to talk about.
You're not sure you want the job?
Yes. Sir, I heard you turned down the UNSOC position.
Yes.
May I ask why?
Because. He paused.
Sorry. She regretted bringing up the subject. I didn't mean to.
Frey, it's all right. I had to ask myself the same question.
He chuckled quietly.
I spoke with Bishop about the UNSOC opportunity. I am staying with ST Alpha, aboard Valkyrie, or whatever ship Bishop and the beer can are flying.
That's where I want to be, she said before she even realized how she felt about it.
Are you sure about that, Major? The stars are likely to see more action with the Alien Legion. Being assigned to Valkyrie is mostly long stretches of tedium.
Yes, sir, but what Star Team Alpha does matters. The Legion is important. She didn't sound completely convinced of that fact. But Valkyrie is the difference between life and death. That's where I want to be.
Of course you do. He laughed again.
Sorry, sir. I'm being honest.
Frey, if you didn't want to be where you can make a difference, that would be a problem. I appreciate your enthusiasm. Have you heard that Major Kapoor is being promoted?
Yes. He will be working with UNSOC?
Correct. He will be coordinating between UNSOC and the Indian Army Star Teams.
I should call to congratulate him.
Quite so. He cleared his throat. Kapoor is a good man. His departure leaves an opening as my second in command in ST Alpha.
It does, she agreed with a catch in her throat.
Would you be interested in that job? It would involve more administrative duties than your previous role.
Administrivia I can handle, sir. Are you certain I am the best person for the job?
You have doubts about your ability?
No, it's just I didn't qualify for service aboard the Dutchman. I fell into it because I was with you when Bishop had to steal the ship.
That is exactly correct, Frey. It is also irrelevant. You have proved yourself many times in action. Training exercises are all well and good. They do not show what a person will do in action when everything falls apart and we need to improvise. That is what ST Alpha needs.
I would be honored to accept, sir. Is it possible?
Why do you ask?
There are political considerations. If I join you, the two senior positions of ST Alpha would be occupied by people from Commonwealth nations.
She referred to the Commonwealth of Nations, countries that were historically part of the British Empire.
That will not be a problem?
National rivalries are a consideration. However, I will handle that. The expansion of UNEF opens opportunities to many nations.
I don't want to cause trouble for
Frey. It is my decision to make. I will handle the bloody politics.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
You accept?
Hell yes.
Excellent. I need you here within 36 hours. I will clear that with your present chain of command.
Where is here, sir?
Queensland, Australia. We have a jungle training base here.
That surprised her.
Not in Belize?
She knew the SAS trained in that former British colony in Central America.
The Belize training site does not provide a large enough footprint for people who can run 100 kilometers per hour in a mech suit, he explained dryly. Also, we will be parachuting from orbit. We need a large section of empty airspace.
Gotcha. Sir, if we need an Arctic training site,
way ahead of you, Major. There are several sites in the Yukon under consideration, along with sites in Norway and Western China.
I will be on the first available flight.
Don't bother, Major. Contact Skippy directly for transport. UNEF has dropship training flights every day. One of them can bring you here.
Understood. May I ask a question?
Go ahead.
If I hadn't called you, would...
I already sent your government an inquiry about your availability. I was about to contact you. Hearing that was reassuring, that Smythe had not made a spur-of-the-moment decision.
Do you know who else will be on the team, sir?
Two friends of yours from Riker, Grudzian and Durand. Justin Grudzian's presence on SD Alpha did not surprise her. Capitaine Camille Durand, however, had not been part of the star team aboard Valkyrie. She was one of Fabron's commandos from Paradise. Frey had been forced to add Durand to her team for the hospital raid on Rikers because of a personnel shortage. Durand had proven to be an outstanding soldier, but Frey had not heard the French woman was even interested in applying for a star team.
It will be good to see familiar faces, she said neutrally.
There were likely going to be many new faces aboard Valkyrie. UNEF Command had ambitions to build or acquire a fleet of ships. Whatever those ships would be doing, she could be certain that special operations troops would be needed.
Do you have any other questions, Major? Smythe asked, and she could hear voices in the background.
Taking the hint that it was time to wrap up the conversation, she asked,
Just one, sir. In Australia, will we have to eat Vegemite?
That drew a laugh from Smythe.
No, although they do have very large spiders here, and I'm told they are delicious on the barbie.
After the call ended, she looked out the window, where a spider was trying to repair a web that had been torn by the rain and wind that morning. The spider was no bigger than a fingernail, but it made her think of the nasty creatures to be found in the Australian bush. Poisonous spiders, snakes, and jellyfish, great white and other types of sharks, and the famous saltwater crocodiles. For certain, she would check her boots before putting her feet in them. Then she laughed. A saltwater crocodile might be a fearsome creature, 6 meters long and weighing 1,000 kilograms, with jaws that had the most crushing bite of any living animal on Earth. But if a salty attacked her while she was wearing a mech suit, she could simply tear its head off. Maybe she would find out what barbecued salty tasted like.